It's cool story, cool story. The Wheel of Time, the ultimate fantasy. It's cool story, cool story.
Hey.
Hello.
Here we are. It's a brand new book. It's a new season.
It's going to be a lovely day. A lovely day.
Okay.
It was so weird jumping back to, like, present day in the books.
I know. I mean, we'll get into it when we start the chapter, but what a way to start, and what a deep dive into, like, looking up names I had to do.
Listen, you're not alone in that. There were a few names that I was like, okay, let me just make sure I remember what we know about this person.
Yes.
So this is the prologue for Lord of Chaos. And let me tell you, it is a 70-page prologue, and it took me, I tracked, 2 hours just to write my notes for it.
Oh, it's 11 perspectives.
It's 11. It was so funny, too, because you texted me at, like, 9 o'clock my time last night, and I was like, okay, I'll do it now so we can, because originally we were going to record, like, Monday or Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I was like, okay, this next one is probably the last perspective. And then there was like, oh my God, there's more.
Yeah.
I had read it. I've obviously read it before several times, but I reread it last week and forgot just how many people are in this prologue.
Yeah. It took multiple sittings of me to read through it. I had to like take breaks because I was like, wait, that was a lot. Let me look up who these people were.
Yeah.
And let me take a break.
Okay. Well, what's new with you? Anything?
Let's see. Oh, I finished through, kind of silly, but Summer House. I caught up.
Oh my gosh.
Complete. I was like three seasons. Yeah, I was like 3 seasons behind, so I finally caught up. And I'm going to watch Winter House because why not? They're short.
But did you ever really watch the first one?
No, I just started the first one. I watched the first 2 episodes. You know, it's what I don't really like those people, so I'm not like thrilled to because I saw them on Summer House now.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'll decide when I finish the last season if it's worth watching them.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, I like some of the people on Summer House, so I'll watch it just to see what they do.
Right,
but like, I don't really like those people from
that's fair.
Southern Charm. They're really gross.
Yes, agreed.
So yeah.
Miles and I watched the most recent season of Black Mirror. Have you seen that?
Oh, not yet. How was that?
Good. I would say there were a couple episodes that, in my mind, Black Mirror has only ever been about technology. And there were several episodes in this season that were definitely not about technology. So it was kind of like a weird departure. And one of them, like, is considered the lowest rated episode of the entire series.
Uh-huh.
I didn't mind it, in part because I was like, oh, this is really scary. But a lot of people didn't like it. And then the final episode had nothing to do with technology and was kind of, like, formatted in a interesting way. But, I mean, overall, I liked the season. It was, I think the first episode feels the most like regular Black Mirror, and it has Annie Murphy from Schitt's Creek in it. Ooh. And I just love her, so.
Okay, yeah, I'm into that. I started watching, I think it's called What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that really, but I haven't seen a lot of it. I've seen a little bit of it.
It's funny. We started it last week, and we watched through, like, the first 5 or 6 episodes so far.
Does that have Fred Armisen in it?
I'm not sure. It has a lot of people in it, though. Like, a ton of people. I'm seeing, like, every episode. I'm not sure who stays or who doesn't, but I've already seen, like, big people, like, just make one episode cameos. It makes me want to watch more. It's been really funny so far. We started watching Jury Duty, I think it's called.
Oh, I've heard that's really good.
Yeah, it's really good so far. We're in the 3rd episode, and it's, I think it's on Amazon. We're watching on Amazon Prime.
Miles and I have also been watching Silo on Apple Plus or whatever it's called.
How's that?
It's good. I haven't heard of it. You haven't?
Mm-mm.
It's basically like an underground civilization of people, and maybe the government is lying to the people, and maybe some people are starting to figure that out, kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, it's supposed to be post-apocalyptic, and people now live underground, but maybe that's all a big lie somehow. And it's interesting because the very first episode stars Rashida Jones. And I was like, oh, Rashida Jones, cool. And then she is only, so far, only in the first episode. And I was like, huh, okay. Like, it just, she to me is not somebody who would just be like
a cameo.
A cameo. So I was, I keep expecting her to come back in some way, but it hasn't happened yet so far. But
I love that.
Overall, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I love unexpected cameos from people who just don't normally seem to be the type to do that.
Yeah.
Because that always makes me feel like they're doing it because either A, they really, really like the project, or they really like the people involved in it in some way.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I trust your opinion because I like you in other things.
That was like the season of Black Mirror. I was like, wait a minute, that's that person. Like, mm-hmm. they have people, actors who are, of course, like lesser known and stuff, but... Then there were several episodes where I was like, wait, that's Kate Mara. Wait a minute. That's, what's his name? Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. So anyway, that's what we've been up to.
Yeah, I don't think I have much else. I'm trying to watch through Succession. I don't know.
Where are you?
I'm still in the first season.
Okay.
I just finished the seventh episode. It's like a therapy session.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I like it, but it's so unhappy. It's, like, very unhappy. Like,
oh, yeah. Everyone
there's
is
no
awful.
Joy, and there's no, like, redeemable character I'm finding. It's just a bunch of terrible people doing terrible things to each other. I don't like any of them at all. Like, at all.
Yeah, that's, I think, fair. Did you ever watch Veep?
I'm watching Veep. Actually, it's funny that you say that. I'm rewatching Veep. I never watched it through. I think I've watched like the first two seasons.
Oh,
but I always liked it. And so when I'm watching comedy, that's what I'm watching now.
I still think Veep is one of like the best written shows of all time. But to me, Veep and Succession are very similar. But Succession is like the darker, more sinister cousin to Veep.
Oh, yeah, because at least in Veep, like, the people are unlikable in many ways and have a lot of things that, like, make me be like, oh, my God. But they have human qualities that are accessible and relatable in some way. And these people just seem like every episode, I think, something is going to happen with this person. I'm going to like them more. Maybe I'll like Siobhan more. No, you're pretty terrible too. Oh, you seem kind of reasonable. Your biggest thing is that you have like a weird setup with your sex worker as a girlfriend. So
you're kind of
off on the side doing your own thing. Oh, no, you're kind of gross too. And she's even kind of opportune. It's like the Culkin
They're all pretty awful.
Brother is terrible. The other brother is terrible. They treat that nephew like garbage.
Yeah, poor Greg. I think the Culkin, is that Kieran?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think so.
I think he's my favorite character.
Yeah, I mean, he's funny. I don't know. I'm going to keep watching it because it's really, like, well-written and it's an interesting story.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, I'm intrigued by what's going on. I'm curious what's going to happen. Also, it's a lot of business talk and finance and all that kind of bullshit, which I could care less about at all in, like, ever. So
yeah,
I have to like
have to
muscle
that
through that.
Out.
Yeah. but I'm going to keep going and see if it gets any better. But are there ever any characters on this show that I'm going to be like, I care about you?
Well, I think at different points you'll end up like throughout the whole series, you'll end up rooting for different people. Okay. And then something will go wrong or they'll do something awful or fuck up. And so I think what Succession does well is it kind of gives you like sort of like the hot potato of who you're rooting for.
Mm-hmm.
But never any one specific person consistently.
Mm. Okay. Well, I'm on the ride, but,
okay.
But anyway, that's it. That's all I got. I'm raring and ready to go if you are.
Okay. I'm ready.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Welcome to the Lord of Chaos, or I think it's just Lord of Chaos.
Lord of Chaos.
Book 6 of the Wheel of Time.
Here we are.
This is the prologue called The First Message. And the sigil, as, you know,
is customary.
Appropriate for a prologue, is the Wheel of Time. So we actually open with Demondred, who I think this is his very first appearance in the series. He might have been mentioned before, but I don't think we've ever seen him.
That's my recollection as well. I've heard his name, but I'd never seen him.
Yeah, I think we did a little, or I did a little Google on a wiki that mentions people's first appearance, and it indicated this was his first appearance. So here he is. And he is nowhere else but Shael Ghul, which is, you know, the like little area of the Dark One. Think of like Mordor from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. Or the elephant graveyard in,
in the Lion King. I was just watching, I don't know, sometimes YouTube recommends me the most random videos, and it was like the top 10 Disney songs that didn't have to go as hard as they did.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Be Prepared from Lion King.
Yes. And you know what? It did need to go that hard. That's one of my favorite songs from that movie.
I agree. And it's so funny. That was the first album that I remember, or the first sort of like soundtrack in my childhood that I remember we got on CD and not tape. Ooh. Like CDs were like the new technology at the time. Oh, and I remember me and my cousins kept like listening to Be Prepared over and over. And my cousin, who's like 2 months younger than me, was like, stop replaying it so much. You're going to wear that part out. And I was like, that's not how CDs work. But it's just like, you know, that's that is how tapes work. So anyway.
We always used to say that too. Oh my God. Always used to say that.
Yeah. Oh, the days. Anyway. So Shael Ghul sounds like a pretty awful place. It's bitter cold. There's murky clouds. Lightning shoots up from the ground to the clouds. There's like steam vents everywhere. There's like gross inky streams of water. But we learned that during the Age of Legends, this place was referred to as an idyllic island in a cool sea. So it sounds like a cute little area to have a little seaside cottage in.
At one time.
Not so cute anymore.
Yeah.
And Damondred sees one of the forges of Shael Ghul there, and he hears like hammers ringing. And outside this forge is a woman huddled with 2 children, and they're obviously prisoners from raids in the borderland. And as Damondred is watching, one of the forgers comes out of the forge, and he's like this, I just think of like the Thing. It's the Thing, right?
From what?
From like the Fantastic Four.
Oh yeah. Like the big monstrous sort of
made of rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what I picture is like a bunch of the things.
Okay.
Because he's like made of
I see this when I saw this or when I saw this in my mind's eye. It was very like Final Fantasy to me. I saw like big hulking like enemies,
like the golems from Final Fantasy. Yeah. Well, those are kind of like the Thing, I think.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's kind of the vibe I got, too.
Okay. And so these are the forgers, and the one purpose that they serve is to make the swords for the Myrdral that are, like, dangerous, poisonous, kill people.
So weird to have this part explained. Like, the making of the weapon. Like, you don't think about this kind of stuff happening with enemies often, I guess.
Right.
They just kind of have the weapons, and you just kind of assume they have them through some kind of dark circumstance because they're bad guys. It's kind of cool to see the inner workings of, like, how these weapons are made and these big monstrous things whose sole purpose is to do that. I almost feel like they're, like, they're being punished. It's, like, their version of hell, just stuck at these forges making these things.
Interesting. I could see that.
Hmm.
So they are in charge of making the swords. And basically what we learn is that the power of the Myrdral swords comes from the souls of these, you know, people who are kidnapped and taken to Shael Ghul. There's like a scene where we like hear a man screaming like, no. And then like his scream gets like further and further away, like Doppler effect kind of thing. But it in my mind, we don't see it. But he's like his soul is being like sucked into the blade.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds like a pretty awful way to die, or maybe not die, and instead, like, live forever inside of a sword.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that. Ooh, living forever inside of a weapon of a dark friend, or a shadow spawn.
Like Fee from... Oh, did you ever play Skyward Sword, The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword?
No, but I wanted to tell you, I restarted Breath of the Wild.
Ugh,
you inspired
finally.
Me. I started
Good.
It... Four
Did
days
you start
ago.
From the beginning?
My old save file wasn't super far in.
Okay.
And so I tried to play from my old save, and I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna restart. So I restarted.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
But no, I have not, to answer your question, no. I've not played Skyward Sword.
Well, you're on the right track. So anyway, Demondred is watching this happen and sees like the woman get ripped away from her children by the forger and taken inside to presumably be the next sword made. And Demondred thinks to himself that like he's never seen less than like 50 people waiting to be processed, and that the Myrdral must be gnashing their teeth. And from the TV show, we know that those teeth are pretty gross.
True.
So then Demondred hears a voice ask him if he's like loitering, and when he should be coming to the Great Lord's summon. And he's at first annoyed, like thinking he's going to like chastise whatever Myrdral is dares to talk to him this way. But when he turns around, it is no ordinary Myrdral. This one
is no ordinary Myrdral.
Is that Ordinary Love?
Yes.
Who sings that?
Sade.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I couldn't resist.
So he's no ordinary Myrdral because he is tall. And he is taller than Demondred, taller than any Myrdral he's ever seen, hands and shoulders taller. And he says his name is Shidar Haran, which means Hand of the Dark. And he says he will take Demondred to the Great Lord. And Demondred is a little off guard because he's like, I don't like this big freaky Myrdral, you know, talking down to me. And I don't like that he's got some name that implies like a connection to the Dark One. Because I think Robert Jordan mentions that most of the times Myrdral's names are in like Trolloc language.
Yes, I did read that.
So, little spooky.
He's jealous.
He's jealous. He's like, never good to have surprises in Shia Ghul.
No, he's like, no one gets to have a title in Shia Ghul before me.
Yeah, basically. So they head into the side of the mountain, which is like there's like a little cave entry, and it starts sloping downwards, and it has stalactites that we learn the height of them varies, which is kind of a creepy little thing where basically they usually like brush at the head of the person who's walking through the cave as sort of like the Dark One's teeth. And another thing that Demondred is like, okay, I like this even less, is usually, you know, like I said, they're right kind of at the top of someone's head, but the Myrdral is given hands of room above his head from the stalactites. And he's like, I don't like that. And then I'm just going to read a little piece. RJ writes, the tunnel opened out suddenly onto a wide ledge overlooking a lake of molten stone, red mottled with black, where man-high flames danced, died, and rose again. There was no roof, only a great hole rising through the mountain to a sky that was not the sky of Thakandar. It made that of Thakandar look normal. It's with wildly, there's a word I don't know how to pronounce, striated? Let's just ask Google.
I think really it's striated. Quickly.
Striated. I got it right. Yeah, thanks, Google.
You got this.
Striated clouds streaking by as though driven by the greatest winds the world had ever seen. This men call the Pit of Doom, and few knew how well they had named it. So this is kind of like, RJ writes about how there's no like specific physical location that the boar exists in, but this is kind of like the area where the pattern feels thinnest and you can kind of feel the presence of the Dark One most strongly here. And Demondred thinks how those who oppose the Dark One are fools. And he tells the Myrdral to leave because he doesn't want the Myrdral to see the ecstasy that's about to overcome him and the pain. But Shidar Haran does not move. And Demondred's about to, like, yell at him. And then in all capitals, the Dark One speaks into Demondred's mind. And Demondred basically nuts his pants with overwhelm. And the Dark One asks, how fares this world? And Demondred thinks how he's always surprised with what the Dark One knows and doesn't know. He's been like surprised both ways. But of course, he immediately reports that Ravan is dead, Lanfear and Asmodian are dead all yesterday, and he doesn't believe in coincidences. And the Dark One is like, you know, those who... I say that so casually.
He's
like, well, you know, those who betray me shall die the final death. Now I'm laughing, imagining me being hired to do the voiceover for the Dark One and being like, girl, listen, those who surprise me and disappoint me, they're going to die the final death. Okay. And he says, Asmodian from his weakness, Ravan from his pride, that even he as the Dark One can't save someone from balefire. Also, I just realized, I don't know if they use pronouns to refer to the Dark One. Did they use he or him?
I don't know. I feel like they always refer to them as the Dark One. But I don't know.
Okay. And then the Dark One asks Demondred if he will unleash Balefire in his service. Well, I guess he does say, well, maybe he says in my service. I'll have to pay attention to that next time.
Hmm.
And Demondred hesitates for a moment because he's like, well, you know, last time reality almost unraveled before we realized what was happening with Balefire. But he says that he will do as the Dark One orders and starts to say how he can destroy Rand as the Dragon Reborn. And the Dark One is like, oh, would you be Nameless? Which we learn is basically the title for the person who stands just below the Dark One.
Mm-hmm.
And Demondred is like, in his head, like, yeah, but... says, like, I only wish to serve. And then the Dark One says, then listen and serve. Hear who will die and who will live. And then RJ writes, Demondred screamed as the voice crashed home. Tears of joy rolled down his face, and unmoving, the Myrdral watched him.
Yeesh.
And then we get a POV shift to Nynaeve, who is sweaty and cranky. And she is in Saladar, and she's sitting in a room with Swan and Leanne and studying them, trying to figure out if she can heal Stilling.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, she's, you know, probing them with the One Power, but she's not actually the one channeling, because Nynaeve is actually wearing a bracelet that's an Adam, and Mageddon is in the room wearing the collar. And so Nynaeve is channeling through her.
Can I tell you, this yes. took me multiple rereads, because I totally forgot what situation Mageddon was in at the last book.
Yes, she was being put to sleep with a fork root in Teleronriad.
I was like, wait a second. What? Who is this person?
Yeah.
No, wait. What? I really was very... I swear to God, I had to reread this multiple times. And as soon as I finished reading this part of this chapter, I Googled it. And I was like, I have to make sure I understood what I just read.
Yeah. Yeah, because at the end of the last book, Nynaeve figures out that Mageddon must have been one of the women who came as a refugee with them to Saladar.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, she put her to sleep with fork root tea. And my assumption is that, you know, they only had three women to figure out, like Nicola, Ariana, I think her name is, and Merrigan. And so they just had to go try to wake up all three and see which one didn't wake up.
Yeah. Wild. I totally did not pick up on that, but yeah.
Yeah, because I think her last words are, see you soon in Saladar, as Mageddon loses consciousness. So here we are.
Mm-hmm.
So Mageddon is still disguised as Merrigan, one of the refugees from Gaelden, and Nynaeve is probing at Swan and Leanne and says that it feels like there's something that has been cut. And Mageddon pipes in and says, in the Age of Legends, what they call stilling or gentling was called severing. And her little tidbit earns her three sets of death glares from Swan and Leanne and Nynaeve. So she quickly, like, it's like, okay, I'll stop talking. And Nynaeve is like pondering how to figure out how to heal these women if she can. And so she decides to remove the bracelet from the Adam and hands it over to Swan and tells her to put it on, which Swan does really begrudgingly, because she's like, only women who can channel can use it. I can't channel. Don't make me do this. But Nynaeve is like, just put the fucking bracelet on.
Yeah, I would be really, if I was Swan, I'd be like, please don't make me do this, because don't get my hopes up. Don't give me a taste of something that I'm like trying really hard to get past that I can never do again.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, as soon as they said that this was called severing, and Nynaeve was like, I was like, I think she's going to, I'm saying it now. I think she's going to figure this out in this book.
You're calling it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so Swan puts the bracelet on and is surprised to find that she can feel Mageddon's feelings, the hatred and the fear, but also some shock. And Swan supposes that it's because Mageddon didn't think it was going to work, that she would be able to feel anything. Although they didn't have Adams during the... Did they have Adams during the Age of Legends? I don't think so. I think it was during Artur Hawkwing's time, which was after the Age of Legends.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they... But regardless, she's surprised that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Try as she might, though, even though she can feel Mageddon's feelings, she can't channel through Mageddon, which, you know, is disappointing to Swan and agitates her. And she's like, get this off me. Like, take it off. And Nynaeve, like, in a moment of, like, kindness and rare patience for Nynaeve, she, like, tries to console her and is like, this is a good sign. Like, this bracelet does not work for women who can't channel. So that must mean there is something to be healed. But Swan is just like, take it off.
Mm-hmm.
So she does, and she starts to give it to Leanne to put it on her, and Leanne is, like, eager to put it on, so it kind of shows to Nynaeve that Leanne is not quite as, oh, this was the word I had to look up, sanguine. I knew that word, but I had never said it out loud.
Is it sanguine? I thought it was sanguine.
I think it's sanguine.
I don't know how to say it either at all.
Now you've put doubt in my head.
That's how I read it in my head, but I have no idea, to be honest.
Google just told me sanguine.
All right, Google. You're not as fancy as my imagination. Sanguine. So she's
not quite as sanguine about putting the past in the past like Swan is.
Mm-hmm.
But it works for Leanne, too. She can't access the One Power, and... she also can't make Mageddon feel anything, which we know is also part of how the Adam works. So she's like also a little disappointed, but, you know, obviously not reacting quite as negatively as Swan is.
Yeah, at least it's something.
Yeah. So Nynaeve takes the bracelet back and like seizes the One Power through Mageddon and is about to start kind of probing at them again when the door bangs open, frightening them all to death because they could all be in serious, serious trouble for hiding the fact that they've been keeping one of the Forsaken prisoner and hiding that from the other Aes Sedai because basically Mageddon would be immediately killed and all three of them would face... pretty severe punishment, like not very shy of that themselves.
Mm.
But thankfully, it is just Elaine demonstrating some very ill manners banging through a door.
Drama-rama.
Yes, it's very reminiscent of the behavior in when they were traveling in the circus. and she's just immediately like starts in on a diatribe about how the Aes Sedai are sending an embassy to Camelin to greet Rand, and Sheriam has said Elaine will not be going and has now forbidden her from even talking about it because she's apparently been very demanding about being part of this embassy. And she's like, I'm the daughter heir of Andor, you know, supposedly my mother has died and it's my place and I should be there. And Nynaeve is like, were you born in a barn? Like, could you knock next time? And Elaine comes back with one of my favorite little lines where she's like, don't be so goosey, because Birgitta is guarding the door and obviously wouldn't let some random person slam through.
Mm-hmm.
But Swan kind of responds to Elaine's diatribe in a not very tactful or kind way and basically is like, your mom is dead, and the tower would never just hand the daughter heir of Andor into the hands of the Dragon Reborn, not when they're sure whether they can trust him, and especially given this supposed amnesty of his, because at the end of the last book, remember, Rand mentioned that he was planning to offer amnesty to men who could channel to kind of, like, gather them to him, which makes everyone uncomfortable because, as we know, men go mad from channeling. And Nynaeve is like, well, surely there won't be many who would, like, take him up on that.
Yeah, right.
And and Leanne explains to Elaine, like, Rand is growing too powerful too quickly. If we just hand him control of Andor by sending you to him, she says basically, like, he could sneeze and the rest of the nations of the world will just, like, fall into his pocket. And we've already lost enough leverage over him with Moiraine dead, and we can't afford to have him not be sort of, like, under our influence.
Mm-hmm.
And Nynaeve winces at this because she has very complex feelings for Moiraine because she hates her, but she doesn't necessarily wish she was dead. But she also is sad because now that she's dead, she can't make her pay for what she's supposedly done to the Evansfield Five. But also Moiraine has accomplished a lot. She killed several Forsaken. But then also now maybe Lan is free for her. So she's very conflicted.
Did we ever find out who Moiraine promised land to, basically? I know he's
not
like,
yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Used to believe before this moment that she had somehow preemptively, like, set him up for Nynaeve.
Mm.
Because she knew, like, she loved him, and she knew that Lan loved her, but was, like, unable to do anything about it. And really the only way Aes Sedai's have, like, had relationships were with their warders when they're green, I've heard. So I thought maybe she was hoping Nynaeve would choose green and do that. But now, after reading this, I think she bonded him to someone else to, like, spare him the, you know, pain or experience of having to be in love with an Aes Sedai or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, a couple things. One is, not only greens aren't the only ones who bang their warders, but they're the only ones who, like, bang multiple warders and have multiple warders.
Okay, okay.
But also, I think Moiraine is, as much as she kind of, like, flies by the seat of her pants, but marches to the beat of her own drum, is the idiom I was looking for. You know, I don't think at the time that she was making these arrangements, Nynaeve was still just barely a new accepted, and she would never pass the bond for Lan to somebody who wasn't full Aes Sedai, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I kind of was hoping that would happen, but I don't know.
Well, so Swan mentions that they are sending an embassy of 9 Aes Sedai to Rand, which is 3 times what they would send to the ruler of any land. So it's like a huge honor. But Elena's like, maybe a huge honor, but also that's a lot. And Rand might make him really nervous because, as we all know, basically 13 is the number that could shield any channeler, no matter how strong. So it might make Rand really nervous to send that many. And Swan is like, well, obviously only one will approach him first, and will, you know, gradually kind of increase the number of contacts that he has so as not to make him nervous.
Can you imagine, like, just randomly, like, one Aes Sedai approaches Rand, and he's like, hi, and he's hanging out with her. And then another comes in, and, oh, okay. And then every subsequent person that shows up, he's like, hey, who is this? And they're like, oh, she's been here the whole time. Yeah. Oh, she's been there the whole time. And he's like, wait, are there 9 of you? What? Yeah. What are you talking about?
And then Leanne pours a little more salt into Elaine's wound and tells her that Min will be going to Rand as well, because her talent could prove useful to him, which is kind of like the last straw for Elaine. And she huffs out the door. And Nynaeve tells Swan and Leanne that they're very mean. But before she can really, like, lay into them and return to studying them, they say that they have work to be about. And if Nynaeve needs to study somebody, she can go study Loghain. And once they're out the door, Mageddon needles Nynaeve a little bit and is like, things don't seem to be going so well for you. Like, maybe you should think about other plans. And we learn a little bit through Nynaeve's point of view that Nynaeve and Elaine have learned a good amount of new things about the One Power and tricks from the Age of Legends through their study of Mageddon, and that they've passed most of them on to the Aes Sedai, which has given them a lot of credit, because, you know, it's not every day somebody discovers something new with the One Power, and especially accepted, so they're, like, super impressed with Nynaeve and Elaine. And this creates kind of some complicated feelings for Nynaeve, because she hates keeping this woman alive or from justice, but she also is like, I need every advantage, or we need every advantage we can to, like, help the Emmonsfield folk and to prevent the Dark One from succeeding and defeating and taking over the world. So she likes the things she's discovering, but she wishes she didn't feel like she was digging through slime to get to it.
Kind of reminds me of some inner conflicts that Moiraine was having in New Spring.
Yeah, true. So then we get a point of view shift to Elaine, who is barreling through Saladar with a clear destination, though we don't know what it is yet. And she's trying not to think about Mageddon or her mother's possible death, which she hasn't really accepted yet, or about Min and Rand being together in Andor when she's being kept from both Rand and Andor. And Andor. Sorry, that just made me laugh.
And Andor.
And Saladar is quite a bustling little town compared to when we last saw it, due in part to Gareth Bryn, who has begun building an army for the rebel Aes Sedai. And suddenly, Elaine is stopped by 2 Aes Sedai, Anaya and Janya. And let me tell you, I think an hour and 50 minutes of what took me 2 hours to make my notes last night was the like trying to keep my fucking autocorrect from changing Jania to Tanya. Every time. And then I would like click the wrong button and then I would have to go back and fix it and it would autocorrect it again and I'd click the wrong button. It made me so mad. Anyway, Jania asks... I hate you. Jania asks, like, oh, do you have any new discoveries for us today? Like, you've been doing so well. You and Nynaeve have discovered so many things. You should be really proud of yourself. And she says, and I'm just going to read a quote, the way of wrapping yourself in light to become invisible. Remarkable. I'm sure someone will find out how to stop the ripples so you can move about with it. And Corenna is quite excited over that little eavesdropping trick of Nynaeve's. Naughty of her to think of that, but useful. Corenna thinks she sees how to adapt it to talk to someone at a distance. And she's like getting all excited. She's brown Aja. So of course, like, so excited by knowledge and discoveries. And Anaya like puts her hand on Jania's arm to be like, you're rambling. But she also congratulates Elaine. And we learn Elaine has made Tarongreal, which of course, obviously the Adam is a Tarongreal and we already know that. But Elaine has also managed to make a Tarongreal that allows someone to use the invisibility trick without, if they're not strong enough in the one power to do it by themselves, which many aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's discovering new things. She's a cool little discoverer.
She is like, she would today be like the leader of those like STEM programs for children, the science, yes, technology ones. She would be like their figurehead. She, yes, would be in Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. She would be Gadget.
Basically. Yes.
I love it. That's pretty incredible.
It is pretty incredible. She's the first person to make a Tarongreal since the breaking of the world, which is pretty impressive.
I, in my mind, her doing that, everyone in Solidar should just be like bowing down to her. I mean,
I agree.
That's huge.
Yeah.
To me. I mean, blows, yeah, my mind. So, wow.
Her only like regret is that she doesn't have any Ongreal or Saongreal to study to see if she can make those as well, which would be pretty cool.
Amazing.
I feel like if she discovered how to make Ongreal and Saongreal, though, like, they would be like, okay, so you're going to sit in this workshop 24 hours a day just cranking these out until everybody has one.
Yeah, that would be pretty nightmare.
Yeah. And Elaine also, you know, knowing that some of their discoveries have come through Mageddon, kind of, like, downplays her achievements and is being a little bit modest. And Jania's like, stop being so modest. Like, I won't hear of it. And she's like... I am sure that the minute we're back in the tower, we're going to be testing you to be full Aes Sedai as soon as possible. And Elena's like, thank you. I have to go now. I need to say goodbye to Min before she leaves to go to Caemlyn. And she keeps trotting through Saladar and finds Min finally. And immediately they're like, you know. And Elena's like, yes, I know. And they kind of sit down and are like, ugh, like we said, friendship, or like our, nothing would get in the way of our friendship, but like, what does this mean? I'm going to see Rand. You're being kept behind. Like, ugh. And Min says that Swan wants her to spy on Rand for the embassy. And Elaine is like, well, you're obviously not going to do that. And Min is like, well, obviously, because they both care about Rand more than any Aes Sedai.
Exactly.
And Elaine asks Min to carry a letter to Rand for her, and Min is like, yeah, of course I will. And Elaine tells her that she mustn't let Rand find out about Min's viewing of the three women falling in love with him, because Elaine thinks he'll be too noble and be like, I'm a threat to the world. I would never, you know, let any of them love me. And Min is like, well, or more likely that if he knows that we'll all come running if he calls, he'll call.
Right.
And so they're like, okay, let's just talk about happy things. And Elaine tries to kind of like channel into the air to make some cool wind and maybe a drop of rain. And Min is like, okay, happy things. Like, I think Rand is winning. Like, the good guys are winning. And Elaine isn't so sure, especially with the weather being so hot and awful as far into the season as it should be, quite cool and wintry. And so she's like, are we? And then we get another POV shift. This one is Fael.
Fael.
I know you're probably like, oh my gosh, we're back in the Two Rivers, finally, with a whole book not having any Perrin.
Yes, I was so excited to see Fael and Perrin. Surprised that our first entry back to the Two Rivers was Fael, though, for sure.
Yes. And she is in the manor house that she and Perrin now live in the Two Rivers. Did you just gasp?
I went, oh. Oh, I have to tell you something really quickly.
Okay.
Yesterday, I finally got confirmation about Yadada.
Oh my god!
I told you I was seeing my friend who says Yadada with me.
Yes.
So I saw her. We went to the zoo. We were chatting. And I said, can I ask you a question? What, you know that thing we say when something's fancy? She's like, yeah, like Yadada. And I was like, yeah. I was like, and her husband was there. I was like, do you say it? He's like, no. Davey was like, of course not. Two of our other friends were there. We're like, no.
Yeah.
And I was like, have you ever met anyone that says it besides us? And she goes, no, I don't think so. So, yeah, it's just a me and Allison thing that I thought was a whole coastal thing.
Oh, my God. Do you think it was like la-di-da, but you made it into ya-da-da?
That is the consensus. Everyone else was like, when you want to say something's fancy, you go la-di-da. And I was like, I still like yada-da better. Yada-da. Anyway.
Oh, that's so funny. So, maybe you should like post about it on Reddit or Twitter and see if anyone else out there says yada-da.
I think people should start saying it. And they should start saying it right now, saying with Fael's manor house
yada-da.
And station. Yada-da. Exactly.
So do you say it with the same? So I would say la-di-da or la. Yeah, I would say la-di-da.
I go ya-da-da.
Okay. So similar.
Yeah.
Interesting. So what's your connection to this person? Like, where did you know them?
We became friends in middle school and have been friends since then.
Do you remember saying ya-da-da all the way back then?
Since high school, at least. Okay. At least. Interesting.
Are you a member of like a Facebook high school group for your high school?
God, no.
Okay. I think you should join one and just ask if anyone else says yada-da.
You know, this year, I'm aging myself, but this year should potentially be our 20-year high school reunion. And we did have a 10-year that I did attend, and I begrudgingly went and ended up having a great time with people I never expected to have. I did. You know what it was?
Wow.
My experience in high school, which I'm sure will not surprise you, was mostly hellish.
Sure, yeah.
And I didn't have a lot of friends, and most of the friends I had early on were like my first friends ever, and I didn't keep them. It was bad.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I never thought I'd go to my high school reunion. And by the time 10 years came around, I felt like so much, I still wasn't out of the closet. However, I felt like much more confident in myself, and I was like, I don't know, maybe I'll go back and show everyone how much I've grown or whatever. Tell them I invented Post-its, exactly. And I was like going back and forth, and enough of my friends were going that I wanted to see. So I was like, let's go in a small group. Let's go immediately to the bar and let's stay as long as it ends up being. And I ended up having a lot of fun with just some people that I had forgotten about. And reconnected with for at least that night. So I would go to a 20-year. I just haven't heard anything about it. I mean, who does that even? Like the committee or whatever?
Yeah, I think in theory, there's like the people who are elected, the student government. I think one of their responsibilities is to like manage the alumni events like for the rest of time.
Let me tell you something. If I don't see it come my way, I'm not seeking it out. But if I go, I'll ask yada-da.
I told you that my 10-year got canceled because of low ticket sales. So not enough people wanted to come. And then my 20-year got canceled because it landed literally at the beginning of COVID.
Oh, my God. How funny. My brother's 20-year got canceled for low ticket sales. So, like, the small group of them that still wanted to go out just went to a bar.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. So we're in the Two Rivers. And basically, Fael is holding court because she and Perrin have become essentially the lord and lady of the Two Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
And Fael is annoyed because Perrin has basically somehow kept like disappearing when they're supposed to be like holding court and settling disputes and all of those sorts of things. Because as we know, Perrin is not adjusting well to being a lord over the people that he's known his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But through Fael settling a couple of these disputes, we learn a few things. First, that Emmonsfield has grown a lot, that there has been a lot of immigration to the area. So it's becoming kind of a bustling little town with a lot of new businesses and influences from people of all different kinds of nations and new trades and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn that not everyone is happy about that because town asshole Sen Bui is essentially there to complain to Fael about immigrants stealing all the jobs.
Right.
And so Fael basically calls him a lazy fuckknuckle and tells him to finish the work that they paid him for that he hasn't finished. And my thought while I was reading this was like, thank God they just killed him right away on the show and we don't have to see him.
That's right.
And once he's done, four of the village wisdoms, which is in and of itself an indication of how much the town has grown, because usually there's one, mm-hmm. and now there's four, come in to complain about some boys having run off. And Fael is like, wait a minute, those boys are like Perrin's age or older, so they can do whatever they want. And then they start to complain to Fael about the weather. And at first, Fael is like, surely they don't think I can control the weather. But thankfully, Fael is a competent ruler who, along with Perrin, has been doing some planning with the townspeople about digging more wells and building canals to keep the townsfolk with water and food. But they're all still worried regardless, because again, it should be like into winter and it's still just unseasonably hot and there's been no rain. Do not sing the song.
I know you hate it. It's okay.
I hate that song. They finally leave, and Fael hears thunder and is like, oh my gosh, maybe there's rain, and goes in search of Perrin and finds him on the third floor of their manor house. Third floor. which I think is bigger than the original inn was in The Two Rivers.
Yeah, that was only two-story, I feel like.
Yeah. And he's on a balcony, and thunder is rolling in, but sadly there is no rain. And Perrin is looking down. And it's so funny how this is written. It's like, and then Fael saw what he was looking at. Two men, shirtless. I was like, you go, Perrin.
Yeah, you know, I was like, there it is. There it is.
There it is. And the two men are Tam and Aram.
So he's into older men. He's into, like, daddies.
He's into daddies and little tinker twinks.
Mm-hmm.
Tinker twinks. and they're practicing the sword, and Aram is getting really good, even though he's still, you know, permanently shunned by the rest of the tinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And Perrin tells Fael that he feels Rand pulling at him and that he has to go to him. And Fael doesn't love that. And he like tries to be like, you're not coming. You have to stay here. It's going to be dangerous. And her POV basically wraps up with her thinking like, it's like, it's fine. I'm going to be going with him. I just have to bring him around to realizing that's the right choice.
Yeah. She's like, fine, I won't go.
Yeah.
You know I'm going.
You know I'm going. Yeah. And then we get a POV shift to Gawain, ugh. And he is with the younglings, his group of stupid little fucks who helped Elida seize control of the tower.
Mm-hmm.
And he is... with a group of Aes Sedai who are being approached by Aiel Wise Ones, emissaries from the Shaido Aiel. And they're being led by Savannah, who is essentially leading the Shaido now that Culloden is dead. And another man hasn't been sent to Ruidian to become clan chief.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, a merchant comes past, and Gawain learns that Morghaes is dead, killed by the Dragon Reborn, and some rumors are saying that Rand even killed Elaine as well.
Great, great. This is exactly what we need.
Exactly what we need.
I was like, this is so ridiculous. Not only do we have this nonsense going on, we have friggin' Savannah.
I know. This is the chapter of like, could you all just be dead already?
I was like, what is this? Every bad guy we know, every yes. person who has ill intent. I guess
right.
neither of them are technically bad guys yet, but Savannah has always seemed like a bad guy to me.
If nothing else, they're dangerous idiots.
Oh my gosh, very dangerous idiots.
So we get a POV shift to the Aes Sedai that have basically just wrapped up their meeting with Savannah and the other wise ones. And the POV is that of Catherine Alruddin, who is one of the Aes Sedai of Elida's embassy to Rand, which, you know, we've got 9 Aes Sedai from Saladar heading toward Rand and another group of Aes Sedai coming to Rand from the tower. So that's probably going to cause some conflict, especially when they all arrive in Andor together.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically wrapping up these negotiations with Savannah, and they've reached an agreement, but we don't really know what they've agreed to, just that they have reached some kind of agreement.
That they have bad intentions.
Yeah. But we do know that Catherine sees Aiel as savages and basically, like, people to be dismissive of.
Right, which doesn't surprise me, because that's how I think a lot of the Aes Sedai, even the well-meaning ones, see them.
Yeah, and, like, think of basically anyone who's not Aes Sedai. Oh, these peasant people.
Yeah.
But Savannah says something to the effect of, "It's agreed so long as I get to see his face. I want to see his face and have him see mine when he is defeated. Only with that will your tower be allied to the Shaido." And Qoiren, who is the Grey Aja Aes Sedai kind of like leading the expedition, agrees, even though Savannah's demeanor clearly annoys her. And Qoiren escorts them out, and Catherine thinks to herself about how, like, it's clearly an honor for them to escort the Aiel out of their camp, making them believe themselves friends and allies. And as she's exiting the tent, Catherine spots Gawain basically, like, disassociating and staring into the distance and thinking about how he's clearly trouble and kind of a wild card. And she's like, maybe I can find a way to make sure some Shaido kills him so that he's disposed of, but it doesn't, like, reflect back on the tower in some way. And as she's staring at him, another Aes Sedai named Galena Kasban comes up next to her, who is the head of the Red Aja and would have been leading this expedition. But Galena pointed out that a Red in charge would make Rand suspicious. And so Elida, who, if she defers to anyone, would defer to Galena, agreed and put Qoiren in charge instead. And they talk about how Savannah will kill Rand if given a chance, and so they agree that she must not be given a chance. And Galena says, "The Emerlin Seat will not be pleased to have her plans disrupted, and you and I will have days to scream in the dark before we die." And through this, we learn that Catherine and Galena are more than just associates in the Red Aja. They are both actually Black Aja.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been given orders to keep Rand alive. And Galena and Catherine is like, "But, like, why would we want to keep him alive?" And Galena is like, "Listen, questions are dangerous for those of us who have sworn to obey without asking questions."
Mm.
And then we get a POV shift to the Aiel Wise Ones with Savannah.
Quick question about Elida and Galena.
Yes.
Galena's the, like, head of the Red Aja, the secret head of the Red Aja, right?
Correct.
So since Elida is Red Aja.
Yes.
And now she's Amarlin, so she's of all Aja, technically.
Correct.
And they're both Black Aja. Wait, is Elida's Black Aja, right? Or do we not know?
We don't know.
I think she's... Okay, let's say she's not Black Aja.
Okay.
Does she still defer to Galena, since Galena was, like, her secret head of her Red Aja, even though she's technically of all Aja?
I think... So technically she doesn't defer to her because she's the one in charge, but basically she has so much history of deferring to Galena and, like, trusting her and respecting her, that it's kind of a, like, Galena's comments and suggestions are given a lot of weight with Elida.
And then let's say they're both Black Aja.
Okay.
I would imagine Black Aja have some sort of hidden hierarchy of their own that has nothing to do with the tower hierarchy.
Yes.
So if they were both in Black Aja, their standing in that little sisterhood is totally different, potentially.
Correct. Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So...
Savannah. And then.
Yes. So basically, it just cracks me up that we learn that the, like, Aes Sedai's interpretation of, like, escorting them out was, like, an honor, and they're, like... they're guarding us like dogs, like we're suspected thieves. It's so insulting. So it's just funny to me to see, like, the cultural differences and interpretations there. Mm-hmm. But Desain, who is the third wise one of the group, has basically been somebody who has kind of like been anti-Savannah and fought against Savannah being officially appointed as a wise one, because she's like, she has never been an apprentice. She's never been to Ruidian. So like, why would we make her a wise one? But Savannah gets what she wants. So she is now a wise one. And Desain is like trying to speak some logic and is like, you know, I think it's a bad idea to go against Aes Sedai. Historically, that is like, we betrayed them and that's why we were punished. And, you know, we should not do this again. But Savannah like basically launches into Celine Dion's A New Day Has Come and is like, I know the best and we're going to do what I say. And then RJ, I'm just going to read a little piece that RJ writes. So she is basically thinking to herself that she wants Rand chained before her like a vicious dog. And only then would the land know that this all truly belongs to the Shaido and to her. And that she had known that even before the strange wetlander man somehow found her in the mountains these people call Kinslayer's Dagger, he had given her a small cube of some hard stone, intricately carved in strange patterns, and told her what to do with it, with the aid of a wise one who could channel, once Althor was in her hands. And she carried it in her belt pouch at all times, and had not decided what to do about it, but so far she had told no one about the man or the cube. Mystery. And then we get another POV shift, and this time we are in the Palace of Amador with King Aelron, who is the king of Amador, which is like... He's basically like more of a figurehead than anything, because it's like the kingdom of the White Cloaks, and we know that Pedro Nile is in charge of that. So it's kind of like he's a king with not a lot of power. And Morghaz is there trying to get his support in her taking back Andor, but he's been kind of like delaying and putting her off. And he's like, yes, let me consider how I can help. Meanwhile, like each day kind of like getting... trying to get her more and more to bang him, I think. And meanwhile, Talon Vor has been getting a little too fresh and informal with Morghaz for Morghaz's taste, because he is referring to her as Morghaz and telling her, we should have gone to Johanna instead of Amador. And she, like, turns around and is like, ba 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 ba, and says, like, I'm your queen, you know, on your knees, da-da-da-da-da. And they kind of like eye fuck for a minute, because he's totally in love with her. And he tells her that, you know, I won't leave your side, the side of death, but until you hold Andor as queen again, like only then will I kneel to you. And if you wish, you can strike off my head. But for now, like we should have gone to Johanna. And she is annoyed by this and goes back to her apartments in the palace that she's been given by Aelron, with her little ragtag crew of Linny and Basil Gill and Lamgwyn and Lamgwyn's girlfriend, who Morghaz hates. And she shuts the men out of the room. And Linny basically tries to convince Morghaz to fuck Talon Vor. And as she's like needling her about that, in walks a White Cloak. And it is none other than Pedro Nile. And he basically tells Morghaz that, you know, don't worry, I haven't come to arrest you. And Morghaz is like, you have no charge to arrest me. I can't channel. And he's like, well, you were tower trained and technically that's enough, but I'm not here to arrest you. I'm here to basically warn you and offer you a bargain. And he says, King Aelron will never give you what you want. And he'll get more and more from you each day. And you'll seem to be getting closer to an agreement, but ultimately he'll just get what he wants from you and never help you retake Andor. But I can help you retake Andor with an army of White Cloaks if you agree to help me take down the false dragon and unite the nations against him. Because as we know, Pedro Nile's grand plan is to essentially lead all of the armies of this world against the Dark One. He thinks Rand is a false dragon, and he wants to take him down. And with Andor, who has kind of historically been one of the more opposed to the White Cloak nations, in his pocket, he has much better odds of that. And so Morghaz is like, I need time to think about this. And Pedro Nile leaves. And not long after, another visitor comes in named Peter Connell. And he's like, hi, I want to help you escape and I'll figure out a plan. And I was just curious if you recognized his name at all.
No.
So in the very first book that when Rand and Matt are on the run and everybody's separated, they meet a dark friend in a town named Pater Connell. And this is that same man is supposedly trying to help Morghais escape the White Cloaks.
Oh, no. What did he do to Rand and Matt?
Nothing really. He's kind of like, you know, the Dark Lord wants you. I will take you to him. And I think they kind of like shout at him and he runs away, basically.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And then we get a POV shift to Pedra Nile, who is arriving back at the Fortress of the Light and thinking about what he told Morghais. And his secretary, Seben Balwer, tells him that he needs some signatures on some papers and also that Jacob Carradine is here waiting to see him. Jacob, as we know, is the head of the Questioners, and he is also a dark friend whose family has been slowly being murdered by Myrdral for not fulfilling his obligations to the Dark One. And Carradine is thinking that Nile is going to order him to go after the Aes Sedai and Saladar because they're like right over the border there. But instead, Nile tells him that he is going to Altara and that Altara is about to be tormented by a plague of dragonsworn. Because basically we learn that Nile has been using, you know, supposed groups of dragonsworn to plague nations to help further his agenda of uniting them against Rand. And then we get another POV shift. And this was the one that I was like, surely this is the last one, but it's not. So this is Messana, which I think this is also her first point of view. And I thought also her first appearance.
I've never heard this name before this.
You probably heard it in like the first book when they mention all of this, the Forsaken, but they haven't talked about her a lot for sure. But she's also there with Semirog. And I believe this is also the first sighting of Semirog as well.
Yes, I've heard of her. But not seen her yet.
And they are doing super evil activities, like building a domino tower and knitting. But basically, they're just kind of like keeping themselves entertained because they're waiting to meet with Demondred. And Messana always thinks about how Semirog makes her uncomfortable. And it's like, well, maybe it's because she's like a notorious torturer and like sadist, perhaps. And Messana is about to lose her patience and leave when suddenly a gateway opens up and Demondred finally walks through. And she notes that his hawk-nosed profile is handsome enough, but that Demondred's life story is basically like almost and not quite. And that he basically has been playing second fiddle to Luz Theron his entire life. And so for that, Demondred hates Luz Theron and the Dragon Reborn, and that hatred transferred right on to Rand.
Classic.
Yeah. And then another gateway opens and in walks Grendel, and the Forsaken have a little chat about, you know, obtaining power and have any of them been able to locate any Ungrail or Saungrail that would help them in their plans against Rand. And Messana explains that the White Tower has guards and wards put on their storerooms inside and out, and everything's counted four times a day, and that the Great Holden Tier also has wards on it. And in this, Messana puts on a lecturing tone, and in this we learn that Messana's backstory is that basically she was a professor who was denied tenure, so she, like, struck a deal with the devil. And honestly, like, an embittered academic turning to evil is, like, the most believable character for me, knowing a lot of people in academia. And so they're like, okay, no dice there, but they ask Demondred what orders he received from the Dark One, and he says the Dark One's orders were to, quote, let the Lord of Chaos rule, and then he tells them the rest of the plans and orders, but we don't hear them. Then we get our final POV shift with the prologue. And it is a man who we don't know yet, whose name we don't know yet, who is in a room with an exceptionally beautiful woman whose name we also don't know. And the man is kind of like looking at his face and touching his face, and he kind of like can't believe that it's real. And RJ writes, not young, but younger than the face he had worn on first waking from the long sleep with all its endless nightmares. An ordinary face, and he had always hated being ordinary. He recognized the sound in his throat as a budding laugh, a giggle, and stifled it. He was not mad. Despite everything, he was not that. And we learn that he has been given the name Osungar, and that the woman is Arungar, named after a pair of daggers that were kind of like famous in the years leading up to the War of Power, that were only popular for a short period of time because the blades were poisoned and ultimately both duelers would die. Which is like, in my mind, I'm like, how did that ever become popular at all?
Honestly.
But suddenly Shaidar Haran is in the room with them, and the woman screams at him, "Why has this been done to me? Why have I been put in this body?" And Shaidar Haran says, "You were both given the best that could be taken in the Borderlands. It is a fine body, strong and healthy, and better than the alternative." And the woman leaps at the Myrdral to attack it, and he grabs her by the throat and holds her in the air, choking her. And Osungar reaches for Sidene, but he finds he can't channel, nor he suspects can Arungar, and perhaps that's part of why she jumped at him physically. Mm. And Haran says, "You have not been severed, but you will not channel until you are told you may, and you will never strike at me. I am Shaidar Haran." And he says, "You will adapt. The body bends to the soul, but the mind bends to the body. You are adapting already. Soon it will be as if you never had any other, or you may refuse. Then another will take your place, and you will be given to my brothers, blocked as you are." And Haran asks her, Arungar, if she will submit to the will of the Great Lord, and she finally says yes, and he releases her. And he goes on to say, "Do you not feel gratitude? You were dead and are alive. Think of Raven, whose soul is beyond saving, beyond time. You have a chance to serve the Great Lord again and absolve yourself of your errors. It is time for you to go into the world once more in the service of the Great Lord. None but I and the Great Lord know you live." And that is the end of the prologue.
Oh my gosh. So Forsaken could just be brought back from the dead?
Ooh, who do you think they are?
I don't know. I mean, it's a male and a female. Mm-hmm. It feels like it could be Lanfear if she's really dead.
Okay.
The male, would it be Raven, maybe?
Well, he just said Raven is beyond saving.
Oh, because Raven was lost to the Balefire, right?
To Balefire, yeah.
Hmm.
So anybody Balefired is basically out of the running.
Okay. Who else was Balefired? Oh, the first... was the first one that they killed Balefired?
I believe Raven and Belal were both Balefired. Wow. Moraine Balefired Belal. Belal in Tyr.
Okay. Who else was killed then?
Well, in the first book, we had Aghanor and Balthamel. Uh-huh. And then Belal, Raven, Lanfear.
Wasn't there one more in the last book?
Oh, Asmodian.
Asmodian. Hmm. Maybe one of the first two that we saw killed.
Aghanor and Balthamel?
Yeah, maybe one of them.
Hmm. Interesting.
They're kind of like, they didn't have a lot of time, you know?
Yeah, true.
Oh, imagine it was both of them, and it was like they were brought back in a male and female body, and that's why the female one is so upset, because
yeah,
it's like, I was something else, and now you know, I'm surprised.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
same
mm-hmm,
way that the other one is.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. Jeez.
Well, what did you think of the prologue?
Oh, my gosh. There was so much. There was so much. It was interesting seeing, like, sort of fast-forwarded versions of, like, Nynaeve and Elaine and Faile. Like,
yes.
Where they are now versus, like, just picking up right where we stopped.
Yeah.
I'm confident that Nynaeve will figure out how to fix severing, how to heal it in some way. I'm confident she will.
Okay. Okay.
I am starting to feel like, I feel like Morghese is doomed. Mm. I do. I thought she had like a chance, and now reminding me that that guy's a dark friend, I think she's kind of doomed. I'm not foreseeing a reunion. I was foreseeing, or maybe I am foreseeing a reunion, but I think it's going to be short-lived somehow.
Okay.
And I am concerned about the amount of Aes Sedai that are approaching Rand at the same time, because we don't know if we could trust all the Aes Sedai in Salidar.
Right.
So some of them could be Black Aja, and then there could be 13 Black Aja.
True.
Seeing Rand. Ah, boy, I'm very concerned about that. And I'm not too concerned about Pedron Nile, with Marques. I don't think Marques is going to go his way, but I'm worried which way she's going to go, because she should know that Rand is the real deal.
Yeah.
I feel like she should believe that based on everything that's happened so far and what she's seeing, and, you know, I'm worried. And I don't know what the Lord of Chaos means, like that sentence. I'm very excited to see new Forsaken and what they're all about. I like seeing little backstories of who they were, like that teacher storyline, and like the other one always being like second in command.
Oh, Demondred, yeah.
Yeah, and there was even like a little message, I think it was about Semiraj, how she wears black all the time, and there was like some weird thing, like maybe she does it because Lanfear always wore white.
Yeah.
I like seeing things like that, and like you, at the very beginning, the forges and how the weapons are made. I just have a lot of thoughts. Very exciting chapter to get back into this series timeline, because so much happens, so it's impossible to feel like you are still in New Spring. I'm excited.
What was your favorite part of the prologue?
Ooh, I was just gonna ask you. I liked a lot of it. If I had to pick one favorite part, it is the... It's so difficult. I liked a lot of the chapters. I think I'll pick the chapter where we talk about Elaine making the Tirongreal, and Nynaeve like searching for the Severing. Like those moments of like their progress, I loved that, because it was like, wow, so much has happened. She's literally made a Tirongreal already. She's disappointed in herself because it was the only one that worked, and she doesn't feel like it works enough. And it's like, are you kidding me? That's so huge. And at the same time, Nynaeve made the discovery that it is called being severed. So to me, severed, maybe this is because I work in healthcare and I had to learn like certain terms in procedures to know like what to look for in different ways. And like severing is always on the list of like of words I'm looking for certain things. So to me, sever sounds like medical. Sounds like procedural, something has been severed and can be repaired, like a tendon, you know? And I feel like that's so exciting. So
yeah,
that discovery for me was the most exciting with them. What about yourself?
I think my favorite part is seeing Semirog, because she is, in my mind, one of the most, like, scary of the Forsaken, because so many of them are, like, just about power, and she is, like, about pain, and I think that's really spooky. And I also like the sort of just like demeanor of this really sadistic person just like sitting there calmly knitting is a very creepy juxtaposition.
And I
just like seeing her. I think she's like what Mageddon wants to be, of like somebody who like truly is in the shadows and like really, really dangerous, and in a way that Mageddon is like a little too self-centered to really ever be. So I enjoy seeing her.
Yeah, and I like even the other Forsaken is afraid of her, or like is uncomfortable around her, you know?
Yeah.
I'm really interested in this Grendel Forsaken character too that we keep seeing pop up. She's so like...
Yeah, I love Grendel.
They all have such interesting personalities. Like, I'm just so interested to see what's going to happen on the TV show when they start introducing some of these characters. And I hope it's not... I just hope it's cool.
I also hope it's cool. And I think Rafe has already said that they have already made decisions about Forsaken that they're going to combine, because they could never keep 13 of them in the show.
Fair enough.
So I think some of them will have multiple combinations, or some storylines might be dropped. But it'll be interesting to see them. And I sent you the link that we now know who is playing Lanfear in the show.
I saw that.
Ooh, I'm excited.
That was one of the guesses I think we had for her, right?
Yeah.
Because we had the actress.
People were either thinking she was going to be Lanfear or Lyta.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I think I saw her as more Lyta.
Yeah. Well, we've got just like 2 months till the show comes out.
I know. I can't believe it's coming already. I mean, I feel like it's been a bajillion years, but I'm excited.
I wonder if we'll be finished with this book by then.
I doubt it.
Okay.
It's kind of long.
It is.
I mean, it's not as long as the fourth book, but...
No.
Hey, do you like free stuff? I love free stuff. Mm-hmm. I love exclusively free stuff. This podcast is totally free, so you should definitely subscribe and rate and review us so other people can find us too.
Yes, and also the best way for other people to find our podcast and try it is if you tell them to, so go recommend it to a friend.
And we really love connecting with all of you folks out there who listen, so if you could send us an email to coolstorypod@gmail.com, we would love it. And you can find us on social media. Instagram and Facebook is coolstorypod, and Twitter is coolstorypod1.
Yes, and we also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/nnmatt, and Matt and I recently played MASH, and so if you would like to hear what our absolutely guaranteed futures are with magical powers and mansions and things like that, you should go check it out.
Yes, and in addition to that, if you'd like to buy us a coffee, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/nandmatt.
Thanks for listening to Cool Story.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.